do the chant. Start with a chant. This is the chant for those who are not familiar with it. It's the Namo Tassa chant. It also has the translation. Homage to him, the blessed one, the fortunate one, worthy one, the perfectly enlightened one. So with this chant we'll honor the Buddha's teachings. So we'll chant it three times. So those who want to go along. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. So lately I've been talking about some of the Brahma Viharas, the divine abodes. Those are the four qualities of heart and mind that we can cultivate, wholesome qualities of heart and mind. Metta, Karuna, Mudita, and Upekka, loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, and equanimity. And last week I did Mudita, and earlier in December I did Metta, so sympathetic joy and loving kindness. And I thought, what shall I talk about today? And I thought, oh, maybe it's nice to just do another one. And Upekka, which means equanimity, is the least well known. I think the compassion one, most of us are familiar with compassion. So I thought, let's talk about equanimity. If I had another week, I could also get compassion done, but I'll go on a retreat. So the Upekka is a Pali term, so the language in which some of the Buddhist scriptures are written down in. And it's often translated as equanimity. And it's a state of being where we are in balance with whatever changing circumstances may occur in our lives, in our minds, in the world. And then the Buddha, he puts it in this way in one of the suttas. He says, gain and loss, disrepute and fame, blame and praise, pleasure and pain, these conditions that people meet are impermanent, transient, and subject to change. A wise and mindful person knows them and sees that they are subject to change. Desirable conditions don't excite his mind, nor is he repelled by undesirable conditions. So this really points to this equipoise. We're neither excited by what we desire, nor are repelled by what we don't desire. When equanimity is present, we are not so much swayed anymore by these worldly winds, as they are called, that the Buddha talks about in the sutta. The pleasure and the pain, but also the gain and loss, disrepute and fame, and the blame and praise. And it is a state of freedom, because we're not so much attached anymore to all these things we want or don't want. And it sometimes people ask, like, oh, it sounds really bland and disconnected. I'm not sure if I want that. But once we experience it for ourselves, we will start to see that it's actually a very peaceful state of mind. It's very rich and warm and very connected. And Gil Van Stel, who you've been listening to in the other weeks that I'm not here, he says that he compares compassion and equanimity to each other. And he says, compassion is like the love of a mother, while equanimity is like a grandmother's love. Because when we feel equanimity, we have a little bit more distance to what is going on compared to compassion. Like, for example, if we are a mother and we are closely watching our child, and we kind of get, you know, excited every time our child is on the jungle gym or something, and we're really ready to intervene at a moment's notice. But when we are a grandmother, we, you know, we've raised our children and now they're these grandchildren, and we've seen it all before. We know that things usually turn out to, you know, quite well, and we're just watching our grandchild and just give it the space to explore, and we just don't really, you know, get all excited about certain stuff. So as grandmothers and fathers, we are aware that there is this suffering in the world, just to make it a little bigger. And our hearts are open and resonant with that, with all that suffering. But there's also a knowing that our sphere of influence is limited. And that is something that, as a grandmother or father, we can accept with equanimity. So we realize that other people's suffering and happiness are within our circle of concern, but often outside of our sphere of influence. And equanimity is often intertwined with the concept of kamma, or karma in Sanskrit. Because there's this phrase for the practice of equanimity that is used in this classical work that I also referred to last week, which is written by the monk Buddha Gosa, the Visuddhimagga, Path of Purification, that he wrote in the 5th century. And in this Visuddhimagga, the Path of Purification, all those four Brahma Viharas, he just offers a practice with phrases for all of the four Brahma Viharas, also Upekkha, equanimity. And for equanimity, he only offers one phrase, which is, you are the heir and owner of your kamma. Your happiness or unhappiness depends on your kamma, not on my good wishes for you. So kamma is a Pali word again, and karma is the more well-known word, the Sanskrit word that we all know. And this literally means action. But what we often mean when we talk about karma or kamma is the fruits and results of those actions, which is actually kamma vipaka in Pali. So in a very short way of describing kamma is that these actions, our actions, our choices, our intentions that we bring into this world all have certain results, basically. So wholesome actions and intentions will have wholesome results, and unwholesome actions and intentions will have unwholesome results. So what we mean by wholesomeness is that it leads to less suffering and more happiness, and that it leads to less harm as well. Unwholesome actions and intentions might lead to more suffering and more harm in the world, in ourselves or others. So kamma is actually a very deep subject, and I won't discuss that in great detail tonight. And the Buddha actually says about the subject of kamma, if you think about it too much, you'll get mad. So don't try to understand it too deeply. And the main point in regard to the practice of equanimity is that all beings are responsible for their own actions and choices and intentions. To a certain degree, we all have a certain choice to take wholesome actions and to abandon unwholesome actions. And of course, that doesn't, you know, always account. Sometimes we don't have a choice, but for those moments that we have, we are responsible, between quotes, for what we're doing. An example could be that when we have a child, a young adult, and our child wants to get out, you know, get very drunk on Saturday night and party all night. And as a parent, you might really try to avoid that and say like, oh, you're going to be really sick tomorrow. That's not a good idea. It's not very wholesome. But we cannot really control, you know, our children in that way often, or sometimes we may be able to. But at some point, we need to let go of what other people do, like our children, and make choices, or let them make their own choices and learn from them, from it. And that, of course, doesn't only account to our children, but to all people, all beings even on this earth. Also, animals make their own choices. And as most of the time, we are not in control of other people or other beings. And equanimity is about leaving the responsibility with those other beings. So it allows us to see that we are not in control or don't have power over the choices or actions that others make, even if they are unwholesome. So this is really about facing the truth of that there's a lot that is outside of our sphere of influence. Our influence might not be as big as we actually wish. And despite that fact, despite that truth, we regularly all probably get, you know, upset about, you know, something that we can't really control or influence. Like a small example that I had the other day was that the grocery store stopped carrying my favorite chocolate. I felt a little bit of an aversion coming up. So, or maybe another example could be our colleague is just, you know, sick and we just have to do all the extra work that our colleague normally does and we feel, you know, overwhelmed by that, but we can't control it and our colleague can't even control being sick. Or simply maybe because that it rains and that the sun doesn't shine, you know, we can be worked up about that. So if equanimity is present, then we actually see like, oh yeah, this is outside of my sphere of influence, you know, and we can actually let it go. We can let go of that worked upness, that, you know, the aversion that can come up, or sometimes it can be longing. And there can be like an okayness with whatever is happening. So of course there are situations that we can control, which is also important to note and to act if it's needed or wished for or appropriate. So it's also important to note that of course we don't have to be completely inactive, letting everything just happen. You know, it's more about letting go of the things we cannot control. We cannot change so easily. And what that sentence that I wrote, that I read also points towards is that we can be equanimous in our other Brahma Vihara practices. For example, wishing others well, we don't control how our wish lands, right? Or even if we help other people or care for other people, we can't control how that's being received. So that's also something that we can let go of. And it's not that we say like, oh, I don't care. You're responsible for your actions and your karma. But equanimity is actually not an indifference. Like a grandmother is not indifferent towards her grandchildren. She's very involved and caring often in my perfect grandmother picture. But at the same time, this grandmother also sees that, you know, that she has not that much influence on the choices. on how life goes and how the ups and downs of life go. So Jack Kornfield says, true equanimity is not a withdrawal. It's a balanced engagement with all aspects of life. It is opening to the whole of life with composure and ease of mind, accepting the beautiful and terrifying nature of all things. Equanimity embraces the loved and the unloved, the agreeable and the disagreeable, the pleasure and the pain. So it's not a withdrawal. It's not indifference. And then often we can mistake indifference for equanimity. But the difference is that equanimity actually has a warmth to it and a care, while indifference feels cold and distant. So equanimity can help us to stay balanced in the face of suffering. So it can be connected to compassion. If compassion isn't supported by equanimity, then we can kind of, you know, sink away in the misery of all the suffering that we're seeing. Well, if we can stay balanced, if there's some equanimity, we can see, you know, that our sphere of influence is not that big. That can really help to actually feel the compassion in a balanced way. And so we don't only see that other people have certain responsibilities and for their own actions, etc. We also see that we are responsible for our own actions and choices and the consequences of those actions and intentions and choices. And we could try to make wholesome choices and abandon those that are unwholesome. That is what is within our sphere of influence. Our own choices and actions are within our own sphere, our inner sphere of influence, which is actually the good news. I mean, sometimes we just don't want any responsibility, of course, but if we actually think about it, then, you know, we can actually control some of our experiences. I mean, we can't control bad things happening to us, but we can control how we respond to those things. And that is actually, if we respond in wholesome ways, that can be the foundation of a happy life, of less suffering in our lives. And of course, there are things that happen to us and other people and other beings that we don't choose, but that do have a huge impact. Let's say an accident or a natural disaster, or something terrible like an attack or something like that. So it's good to keep in mind that we can't control everything, or not even our own lives. And that those things also influence us. And like I said, we can control how we respond to those things. And that's a huge lesson if something big happens. Most of us might not be able to respond in a wholesome way right away, but that's the lesson. That's the way that we start to learn to purify our own hearts and minds, by acknowledging how we do respond and how we wish to respond maybe in the future, to see. Yeah, see the truth of what's happening. And so, a little bit about the actual practice of equanimity. Upekka in Pali. So like the other Brahma Viharas, equanimity also has a near and a far enemy. And the near enemy is that which we easily take to be equanimity, but is not. And the for equanimity is the opposite of what equanimity is. So the near enemy is indifference, which I already talked about. And indifference can really look like equanimity, but it does miss that care and that warmth that I was talking about. And the distant enemies, there are two of equanimity, are desire and resentment. Desire can express itself in the desire to, for example, influence the happiness and suffering of other beings or ourselves, like when we do the metta phrases, and we say, oh, may you be happy, and then we feel attached to the outcome of our metta phrase. And resentment, it's just like the desire, it's about wanting things to be different than they are. And wanting things to be different than they are is the exact opposite of equanimity. When we're equanimous, we are okay with how things are. And it's very important to note that we can't really force equanimity. It is something that needs to be cultivated and developed. And it's also something that can arise out of our meditation practice. So one way to cultivate it is through using phrases, like with the other Brahma Viharas. And I'll get back to the phrases in a little bit. But if we practice mindfulness, equanimity actually can arise from our practice. There's this researcher, so a scientist called Juno. And he says, mindfulness practices may lead to a de-automatization of the relationship between stimuli and affective evaluations. This de-automatization of emotional processing could lead to more neutral reactions to emotional stimuli, or in other words, to equanimity. So when we practice non-reactive awareness, then we are training equanimity. So when we are practicing vipassana, insight meditation, we are practicing also in a way equanimity, because we are non-judgmentally aware. So the awareness, the mindfulness itself, is non-judgmentally aware. And we can be aware of the judgments that arise in the mind, but the awareness itself doesn't have a judgment. It just notes whatever is arising. And that's kind of an aspect of equanimity as well. And so we can train this a little more by using phrases. And as is true for all the Brahma Viharas, the practice is also a purification process. So we might come up against those enemies of indifference or desire, or resentment, or anything else that is not in line with equanimity, anything that comes up that is not equanimity, aversion or discouragement or whatever it is, we can see that as a part of the purification process. So the Visuddhimagga, the path of purification, that book suggests that phrase that I have already mentioned earlier, which is, you're the heir and owner of your karma. Your happiness or suffering, or your happiness or unhappiness, depends on your karma, not on my good wishes for you. So this is a rather long phrase. but I have noticed that if you know it by heart, you can use it for your practice. So you kind of have to learn it and then use it in your practice. And you can also substitute the word karma for actions if it's a word that triggers you or just doesn't have any, you know, meaning for you. And there are also, you know, Western teachers who have suggested other phrases. So some of those are, I wish you happiness and I can't make your choices for you. That could be one. Another one would be, may you be in balance, or may you view the comings and goings of things with equanimity. And I want to leave some time for discussion, but just very briefly, I touched upon the that each Brahma Vihara, we practice that for different categories of beings, and each Brahma Vihara is one that is easiest, and for equanimity, that's the neutral person. And the neutral person is someone who we don't feel strongly about, neither in a positive way nor in a negative way. So maybe a store clerk that you sometimes see in a supermarket or another grocery or another store, or maybe someone you see walking around in your neighborhood, you know, someone you don't really know that well. And then after the neutral person, you go to the benefactor, the good friend, the difficult person, then yourself, and then all living beings. So that's the basics of the practice. And let me end with a quote from the Buddha, a very short one. He has a pleasant abiding who has equanimity and is mindful.